This episode is sponsored by Kinsta. Between juggling client meetings, managing your website, and keeping up with everyday tasks, who has the time to stress out about website security? Well, with Kinsta, the technical stuff is taken care of, so you can focus on what you do best. Kinsta provides managed hosting for WordPress, offering lightning-fast load times, top-tier security, and unmatched human-only customer support. Whether you're a business owner, web developer, or running a digital agency, Kinsta makes managing your website easy and efficient. Kinsta provides enterprise-grade security, being one of the few hosting providers for WordPress with SOC 2 and other certifications, guaranteeing the highest level of security for your website. Thanks to their unlimited free expert-led migrations, Kinsta ensures a smooth transition for you from other hosting providers. Customers have reported 200% faster load times post-migration to their platform. What I find cool about Kinsta is their fast and reliable customer service and premium features that are included at no extra cost. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today. That's Kinsta.com. This episode is brought to you by Propel Auth. People take authentication for granted, but it's more than how customers log into your product. It's how you manage your relationship with your users. The easiest way to make authentication your advantage is to use Propel Auth. Propel Auth is more than just functional. It's powerful. With tools like managed UIs, enterprise SSO, robust user management features, and actionable insights, Propel Auth adapts as your product grows. And the best part? When Auth is effortless, your team can focus on scaling, not troubleshooting. That means more releases, happier customers, and more growth for your business. Save dev time, win over your customers, and propel your business forward with Propel Auth. Check them out at propelauth.com. That's PropelAuth.com.
A lot of the team here is very mature and has a lot of years in engineering. You learn over time that you don't have to be right. You have to be very sophisticated in how you divide your efforts and eventually building a system which includes a sensor that collects data at high scale and then an observability pipeline and then a database and then a UI. You have to pick and choose your battles. We started off by creating the basic tiers of observability inside the sensor, which was tracing and infrastructure monitoring. We knew that logs was a big issue that we hold back for a second. So that was the first system to make sure that we're not building everything at the same time and focusing on first getting actual data from the sensor. My name is Shahar Zilai, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of GroundCover.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
Took 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing at the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what to do next.
Took many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
The company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a pain.
Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, my
dear. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Labpart. And today, how Shahar Azulai has built observability for your cloud so you can monitor everything and compromise nothing. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Grow your API user adoption and improve engineering velocity with friction-free integration experiences. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in minutes. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, and AutoTrader, you're in good hands. Join the Wolfpack at QAWolf.com. Shahar Azulai has had many opportunities to get into tech throughout his life. He started digging into cybersecurity when he was 17 years old, where he learned the basics of deep tech that he still utilizes to this day. He's a startup guy and has had the opportunity to be the first employee many times over. But outside of tech, he's married with three boys and a dog. He lives in the countryside and loves to spend time in nature and to cook, as he was a semi-professional chef at one point. Shahar and his co-founder are veterans when it comes to using observability platforms for their teams. They wanted to build a platform that balanced the needs of the system with a lower cost of a fully functional platform. This is the creation story of GroundCover.
So basically, GroundCover is an observability platform built for cloud-native environments. We compete with major platforms out there in the market, Datadog, New Relic, Grafana Cloud, all these names that people know and use. And we're trying to challenge a lot of these legacy solutions in multiple ways, which are based on a lot of technology. We believe in making a change through technology. So basically, we're trying to tackle multiple pains in this market, from time to value and depth of value you get from your observability platform, which is really hard to get today with current platforms requiring tons of instrumentation to your code, all the way through the actual pricing model of these platforms, which is based on data volume. We're trying to reinvent this field with a couple of major changes. One of them is eBPF, which is a technology that allows us to basically turn on the light in your environment and start getting data without you doing anything to your code or changing your environment. We've also challenged the SaaS model. We operate on what we call in-cloud, a bring-your-own-cloud approach, which basically allows us to store and manage our data plane at the customer's environment and therefore stop pricing customers by data volume. These two things together put GroundCover in a very different position to what is an observability company, and that's what we're about. Chaz and I, we go way back, coming from a lot of years in technology, from, again, the more deep cyber part of the stack. We've been using solutions for monitoring for our teams for a while. I got a chance to also pick observability stacks a few times in startups that I've been into. In that perspective, we've been the users of what we're actually building, so it's the classical kind of, you know, generation story from that perspective. Also, the drawn into solving it with very different technology rather than a different go-to-market or a business strategy is what we're about as people. We knew that some of the problems that we faced, an endless chase around, I've instrumented my code, I've put in the hard work, I get the value from my observability system, then my VP R&D calls me and says, you have to turn it down, the cost is too much. It took us into a place of how technology can help us break this trade-off rather than a different approach. Observability is one of the hardest problems out there, right? One of the biggest data problems on the planet. And it's super interesting. That's why we're here.
Tell me about the MVP for GroundCover, that first version of the product you built. How long did it take to build and what sort of tools were you using to bring it to life?
So it took like a very short time. Looking back, I don't know if you know that feeling, but you look back and you say, I have no idea what these guys installed 3.5 years back. After the first 3 months, we already installed GroundCover in a big company. Basically, back then, it was mostly a first eBPF sensor that allowed us to do basic stuff and a few simple dashboards that could just, you know, harvest the data and show and exhibit some of the things that it collects. It was interesting enough back then for a bunch of folks which were early adopters because it still operated out of the box and they did nothing to get this data. And suddenly they saw a lot of intimate data coming off the sensor. But to be honest, it wasn't really an observability platform built to help you troubleshoot and correlate data. And we didn't even collect logs at the very early beginning. So that was the MVP, but it was enough to close for a first customer and start making some noise in that area. But looking back, it sounds ridiculous.
I'm curious about maybe a decision or trade-off you had to make in that early version, right? When building an MVP, you got to make those decisions and trade-offs. And I could probably cherry pick some at a high level, but I'm curious if one comes to mind that was really, you know, instrumental in how you built the platform.
A lot of the early decisions were what should we build and what should we embrace from the community. A lot of the team here is very mature and has a lot of years in engineering. You learn over time that you don't have to be right. You have to be very sophisticated in how you divide your efforts, and eventually building a system which includes a sensor that collects data at high scale and then an observability pipeline and then a database and then a UI. You have to pick and choose your battles. We started off by creating the basic tiers of observability inside the sensor, which was for us back then was early on tracing and infrastructure monitoring. We knew that logs was a big issue that we pulled back for a second. And we've integrated with simple dashboards at the beginning to show the value as we built a more complex and rich UI. So that was the first system to make sure that we're not building everything at the same time and focusing on first getting actual data from the sensor. We understand that it's unique and groundbreaking, and then continue to making sure that we know how to present it the UI. Part of the early decisions we also made was to build GroundCover not as a SaaS platform. That is maybe one of the most deep and influential decisions that we made, because even from day one, the databases and the entire data plane of GroundCover were installed on the customer's premises. That's a very unorthodox choice for a startup in the SaaS era. We felt very intuitively in our gut that it's going to be a huge technical debt that we can never bridge back if we take the SaaS route from the beginning. And that's why we think also that even after all these years, it's a differentiator that it's really hard to bridge rather than the eBPF piece. So since day one, GroundCover decided to make the hard choice of running in the customer's infrastructure. Since then, of course, the concept of bring your own cloud and what is in cloud has evolved significantly from a technical perspective, but the approach stayed the same.
This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory.
I'm so pumped about my new offshore dev partner. I'm saving a ton, and they even signed an NDA. Wait, is that our financial statements on the internet?
My dev partner has great communication. They can acknowledge an issue or email message super fast after they run it through Google Translate, of course.
I have a call set up with my partner right now. Hey, guys. Guys, are you there? Wait, did you just ghost me?
Ever been in these situations? Yeah, me too. That is, until I found Tekla. Tekla is world-class, near-shore talent for technology teams who demand the highest standards. The platform gives you access to over 50,000 vetted Latin America technology experts, including developers, designers, and IT professionals, all fluent in English and all in your time zone. In 7 days or less, you can have your tech expert hired through Tekla's fast, efficient hiring process, which helps you find and onboard top candidates. Get senior-level talent at competitive rates, often half the cost of hiring in the U.S., but aligned with U.S. work culture and time zones, making teamwork easy and productive. Hire the best tech experts today with Tekla. Learn more at tekla.io. That's T-E-C-L-A.io. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Whether you're growing the user adoption of your public API or streamlining internal development, SDKs can turn the chore of API integration into effortless implementation. Unburden your API users from guessing their way around your API while keeping your team focused on your product. Shorten the time to live integration and provide a delightful experience for your customers. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate up-to-date, robust, idiomatic SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in just a matter of minutes. SDKs are feature-rich with type safety, auto-retries, and pagination, everything you need to give your API the developer experience it deserves. Deliver a premium API experience without the premium price tag. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory to get started and generate your first SDK for free. Let's move forward then. So you got the MVP, you're getting some traction, it's working. How have you progressed the product from there and matured it? And I think to wrap that in a box a little bit, what I'm looking for is, how did you build your roadmap? How did you go about deciding that, okay, this is the next most important thing to build or to address for GroundCover?
So unlike other markets, cybersecurity and things like that, the observability market is a very mature market. I think we made a conscious choice to not try and educate a customer about what they want to have, because eventually everybody is using an observability platform. It's one of these things where you can find in any company you walk in, call it red ocean, mature market, whatever you want to. You're not inventing a category. You're trying to create a very different approach into how people onboard into an observability solution and how they conceive and think about it. It was very clear that we had to go for the core pillars of observability, which was log management, infrastructure monitoring, and APM very early on to even have a chance to rip and replace existing solutions. Rather than going for a specific niche and saying we're a sophisticated eBPF tracing platform, we decided to go wider and make sure that we could have all the core offerings of whatever solutions they're using today, because we had an early understanding that it's going to be a rip and replace motion rather than leaving alongside an incumbent and complementing it. The observability market is so mature and so noisy that people have 2, 3, 4 solutions at once. You want to make sure you're helping them getting to some consolidation and some approach of taking ownership of a lot of the data they have. So I think these were the three pieces that we had to build at the same time. And to be honest, we couldn't take an easier choice of just building one of them. The main reason is it just wouldn't have worked. We would have come to a user with some solution X, and they would never be able to get the buy-in from the organization to use us, you know, no matter how cool and modern we are, if we're not bringing them the full value. So it was a dilemma for a startup, for a young startup, but now it allows us to actually scale with replacing these solutions and making sure we get the best value for the customer.
So, you know, I hear you saying we. Tell me about how you built your team, and what did you look for in those people to indicate that they're the winning horses to join you?
So one of the things that I think differentiates these groups from some other groups in the market is that we look at velocity and impact of individuals to be the most important stuff. The tool that would allow us to do the most influence in the market. So the team here is mostly very rounded people, professionals that know how to operate in the design that GroundCover is built today, which is very flat and very unsiloed. So in a sense, you would see people from the R&D influencing marketing and salespeople talking directly to developers and all the mixes that you can imagine. And I think both Chad and I and the original kind of core team bring that DNA of, if you're experienced enough and well-rounded enough, then you're going to have opinions and agenda about product, design, website, and customer success and whatever that is on the table, rather than diving into a very siloed team from the beginning. I think it brings like the best out of people. We have incredible people here that probably do more than what their title suggests. As long as we can keep that going, that's the recipe for the success of this specific team, right? Not over complicating, not over siloing things, but rather letting the raw talent underneath define what people are doing and not doing. It has a limit at some point, but I think right now it still puts us in a very strong position to get the most out of the best people in the industry.
This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. If slow QA processes bottleneck your software engineering team and you're releasing slower because of it, you need a solution. You need QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, AutoTrader, and many more, you're in good hands. Ready to ship faster with fewer bugs? Join the Wolfpack at QAWolf.com to see if they can help you squash the QA bottleneck. This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory. Everyone's talking about AI these days, right? It's changing how we work, how we learn, and how we interact with the world at a tremendous pace. It's a gold rush at the frontier, but if we're not careful, we might end up in a heap of trouble. Red Hat's podcast, Compiler, is diving deep into how AI is reshaping the world we live in. From the ethics of automation to the code behind machine learning, it's breaking down the requirements, capabilities, and implications of using AI. Check out the new season of Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat. Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm curious about scalability. Given the product you've built, this is, you know, obviously an important piece. Did you approach building the product with scalability in mind from day one, maybe with abstractions and things like that? Or have there been interesting areas where you've had to fight it as you've grown?
Our very early decision was to make the product self-served. I think that we understood like a few things that are significant for this market. One of them is that our buyer is someone from DevOps, R&D. They don't want to talk to a salesperson if they don't have to. And also they purchase products through filling them out. One of the things they're not going to do is just walk into a sales call and see a deck without actually talking about a product and kind of diving into that. So GroundCover since the beginning was very oriented about self-served. So we built the product to be documented, self-served, installed. We even have a live playground so you can play with the product even before installing it. But the entire installation process is at your fingertips and you can decide to try out the technology, try out the product without us. That also allows us to scale because we have a lot of discussions with customers after they tried out the product. You know, they already have an opinion, they heard about it. And now we're talking about heavier use cases and comparisons to their current model and migration and discussions that are worth having, but are shorter in time and also very focused. That allows us to keep the sales cycle and the onboarding cycles short and managed by the customer's team mostly, and therefore supporting them rather than leading them along an invisible sales funnel, which, to be honest, isn't really a great fit for this market.
So, Shikhar, as you step out on the balcony, you look across all that you've built, what are you most proud of?
I think I'm most proud of taking on the ambitious claim of building something big rather than playing along the market and saying, you know what, we're never going to replace the big players in the market, so let's just complement it or take a specific niche out of that. Regardless if GroundCover will be the market leader in 5 to 10 years or not, I think that I'm proud of the fact that we're trying to reinvent the entire stack and take on a significant market share and doing that by actually going for the platform play and trying to give you a unified experience to the users with an actual value built on top of UiPath, built on top of InCloud without taking any compromises. At least it makes me and the team feel like we're building something big that we believe in. You know, the rest is up to execution, which, you know, as long as you put, you know, the weight on our shoulders, I think we're in a good space rather than in a good place rather than relying on someone else to make a move to any direction. So I think that's what I'm most proud of. Being ambitious, trying to, take on the crown rather than, you know, playing in the king's court in a sense.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
I think that one of the things that we eventually didn't predict enough is that the bring your own cloud approach would have to be explainable and simplified for the users since the beginning. We took that turn very intuitively, and over time, we see more and more solutions using the term bring your own cloud, from databases to different kind of vendors in different industries in the market. So right now, 3.5 years later, this term is more clear to the end users. I think at the beginning, it was too intuitive. I think we made a mistake of not trying to explain that vision to the user, and we didn't even try to simplify that for the user to explain what are the actual benefits of that part of the stack. It took us a few months to a year to grow out of it, and we saw that once we did that, people reacted much better to that because it felt like an actual trend, an actual technology, an actual value-driven stack that we're building for them rather than a decision we've made overnight to do something different. I think the second thing is just some of the decisions we made along the way are driven by evolution of I've learned something, I've did something. If we had to do this all over again, I think we probably would have made even smarter choices in what to build first and what to bet on, what is the critical features for people to actually replace an existing solution. I have my regrets, right, around how fast could we move around on the same vector, and I guess any founder has it at some point.
So this will be fun to hear the passion in your voice. Tell me about what the future looks like for GroundCover.
the product is already at a stage where it's replacing more and more of the existing solutions. We're seeing bigger and bigger customers walking to the platform. We've built our kind of awareness over time. Still ton to build, but we're already feeling customers talking about us, trying us out, going inbound to play with the platform. And we feel that transition already of building an organization, laying the ground for a bigger company. And I think the future right now is to basically be in the top of mind for people trying an observability solution in 2025. We want to make sure that everybody that reaches that point of considering a transition keeps us there in the top three or four solutions they think about. Ground Cover is laying the grounds to be a big company that will eventually help a lot of customers at bigger and bigger scales. And I think that future is already in the near future of this specific year. And it's an exciting time for us, right? Moving from that original stage of building an idea, building a product market fit, building your first customer base and so on. It's definitely moving on to the next stage of building a company, building an organization, building a market share.
Let's switch to you, Shihar. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
I think that one of the reasons I've started a company was after being a manager and building teams for a significant part of my life, from the army to the industry to startups to big organizations, I had a chance to recruit, hire, train, build teams from different sizes and different aspects of the industry. So I think the things that most influences me are the managers that I had along the way and things that I took for the good and for the bad. The experiences along the way of who were my managers, right? And how I felt about their performance, the teams that they built, the culture that they created was the cargo that I brought into this company. I personally wouldn't have known how to do it differently, right? There's a lot of founders that take this journey earlier. For me, it had to come in a situation where I was experienced enough and saw a lot of things that I wouldn't want to do and also things that I would want to do as part of the organization that I would build. So the passion that I had starting Ground Cover was to build an organization that I thought had the culture and the excellence that I thought that I knew how to bring to the table after seeing a lot of teams forming over the years.
Okay, last question. So you're getting on a plane. You're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give this person, having gone down this road a bit?
I always think about this question because if I was in the same shoes over again, right, I wonder if I would have taken the same choices. Eventually, Ground Cover took a very huge bite of the technology stack with a very tough market, being the very tough product. So the advice that I had to give to myself might have not helped me make the right decision of moving along with this company, because eventually the disadvantages of being an experienced founder is that you also see the risks in everything, right? There's something about that magic of a first-time founder just doing his first thing, that ignorance of not seeing these blockers and these walls in some cases make you better than others. So I think that along the way, when we started out, a lot of people immediately suggested going after big players in the observability market will be just completely insane. But we didn't listen back then. And I think that not listening sometimes has clear disadvantages of failing gloriously, but it also has the disadvantage, the advantage of doing something great. My advice would be to consider hard what you're choosing and if it's the market you want to be in. If it's a product you have a passion to build because you're going to do it for a few years, right? But also not to listen to everybody that is only showing you doubts rather than also the pluses in what you're choosing, because it's super easy to take this side, right? Of just saying, oh, it's complicated. It's a tough market. It's a tough choice. It's a tough go-to-market, tough product, whatever. And eventually any of the other solutions that you're competing with wouldn't have built what they're building if they had listened to these exact voices. So You see the good and the bad after being a few years in, you know, the shoes of a CEO of a startup.
That's fantastic advice. Well, Shihar, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Ground Cover.
Thank you so much for having me.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
Hey For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.